Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Every 10 minutes, another person in the U.S. is added to the waiting list for an organ transplant. Each year, thousands of people die in the U.S. and in Canada waiting for those transplants. Tonight on SDPB-TV at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain, Nova takes you inside the operating room to witness the emotional, high-stakes process of transferring organs from donors to recipients. Meet the doctors, patients, and their families. Joining us to preview Nova's new documentary, Transplanting Hope, we welcome Nova Senior Executive Producer Paula Apsel on the line from WGBH in Boston. Paula, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Lori. It's great to be with you.
Also joining us from Edmonton, Alberta, Niobe Thompson is with us. The filmmaker served as a director and writer for Transplanting Hope. Thompson is also an anthropologist. Niobe, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Paul, let's talk with just the idea of where this documentary came from, because it really represents sort of unprecedented access to the physicians and the families and the patients who are living this process of organ donation every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, the idea came from Niobe Thompson himself, and he can talk about that. But when he proposed it to us at NOVA, we were very excited about it because it was one of those programs that looks at a medical advance that's backed by science, transplantation, which used to have an extremely high level of fatality. And the level of fatality has been brought down significantly because we've really improved and developed a system of harvesting organs, getting them to people quickly, and using much better anti-rejection drugs than we've ever had. And organ failure is fairly common. It affects so many families, and there's a tremendous amount of science behind it. And yet, it's a huge problem because, as you have said, of the lack of availability of organs. Today, 20 Americans will die waiting for a donated organ, and there is a huge transplant waiting list, more than 114,000 people, and a name gets added every 10 minutes. So this was a perfect topic for NOVA. It had the science, and it had the pressing social need.
Niobe, tell me a little bit about where the idea sort of came from and how some of that access to the families was secured.
Sure. Yeah, I think my motivation for getting involved with this film and this topic was learning that most people in Canada and the United States are in favor of organ donation in principle, over 90% if you poll. But fewer than that, by a long margin, have actually signed up to be organ donors in the event of their death. There's this huge gap between, you know, general support for this idea and taking a fairly simple step so that you can become an organ donor. And I thought, you know, the way to try to close this gap is to create empathy with the people who are caught up against their will in the world of transplantation. And, of course, of the doctors who helped them, who saved their lives. Mm. And so when we started off, knowing that this would not be the first documentary about transplant medicine that had ever been made, we decided as filmmakers to try to capture something that had never been captured on film before. And that is the experience of a family losing their loved one and making that decision to donate. We call it the gift of life. But the gift of life is such a cliche. We wanted to bring our cameras right to the bedside and give viewers an unvarnished, immersive experience and to understand what a family goes through when they make that decision. Because, you know, Paula talks about the incredible advances in science. They are incredible, and you'll see them in this film. But none of it would mean anything unless there were families making the decision to donate.
Yeah, and I think that's what comes through so strongly in the film itself is as this high tech, you know, the surgeons are you know, racing across the country to, you know, get to the location they need to be at. But in the meantime, things are moving at the pace of grief and the pace of, coming to an understanding that it's time to say goodbye. Tell us a little bit about Matthew's family, Niobe, if you will. He's 28 years old. There's been some sort of incident where he's now brain dead, and the family is being told. And they go from this this moment of asking if there could be a miracle to saying goodbye.
Yes.
In a fairly, short period of time. It's just devastating to be in that room with them.
Yeah. Well, I won't disagree with you because, in a way, that story was out of our control. We were just blessed to witness it. Matthew Babchishan's story is really the centerpiece narrative of the documentary. It's such a tragic story. So Matthew was a 28-year-old hockey player, athlete, and he died of accidental fentanyl poisoning. Long story, but essentially he was on a tattooist's table getting a tattoo, and the tattooist offered him a pill, which turned out to be fentanyl, and his breathing stopped. I had moved into my own basement when we were making this film because I had to be on call 24 hours a day getting calls about potential stories. So I got a call in the middle of the night from an intensivist who just admitted Matthew. He described the situation and offered to introduce me to the family. So I drove across the city and began to explain who we were to the parents of Matthew, Carl, and Leslie. And Carl interrupted me in the middle of my spiel and just grabbed me by the arm, took me into Matthew and said at Matthew's bedside, "This is my son. We don't know what's happened. We just want you to tell his story, to make sure that the world gets to know what happened to Matthew." And our film crew was there within 20 minutes, and we didn't leave their side for the next 5 days until his organs were going out across the continent to save other lives. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to see, and one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in a career of filmmaking.
It seems, I don't know, I don't want to be flippant and say, how did this impact you? Because clearly it's the family that, you're observing. But it has to be quite a moment for you as a filmmaker to to be in that process and know that the work that you're putting together is going to have the impact that it will.
Well, it changed me forever. But yeah. As we were there, I knew somehow that Matthew's story would be transformational. I mean, of course, the fact that he became an organ donor saved lives. But now that this story of his is reaching the world, reaching American audiences, it's, I hope, changing many minds and having a much greater impact. I mean, I'm so proud of what his family did. I was so impressed by their bravery. And I will say that we are good friends. We just saw each other last week, and they're doing really well considering they've lost their son. I don't think I have many more of these stories in me as a filmmaker. It was such a gift.
Yeah. Paula, also...
Oh, Niobe, I think you probably do. But Niobe is such a fantastic...
I'm glad to hear that, Paula.
And I have to say that what I hope, and I know having... As we worked on the film, having watched it so many times, and it's very difficult to watch, but you're really thinking, okay, how is this going to relate to the audience? So many people believe that science is something remote out there, and they don't realize that the minute you walk into a hospital, science hits you right in between the eyes. And the impact of years of medical science is suddenly on you. And we just hope that when people watch this film, they realize that the scientists and the doctors have done what they can. And now, of course, it's up to us. And you see what it means for families to receive a transplant and get the gift of life. But it's up to ordinary people to understand what that means. And we really hope that ARNOVA will give them that understanding.
And Paula, there is a lot of remarkable science in this, some science that's well established, and then some that is sort of pushing this whole conversation forward.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment where there's a baby who's receiving a heart transplant. And I'm fully engaged as a viewer thinking about this baby Harlow and getting this heart and then feeling mm-hmm. the grief right. of the baby who's donating the heart. And then the surgeon holds the heart and his or her hand, and I just think, oh my gosh, that's so tiny. And you just and then they put it in, they take the clamps, and it starts to beat. So there's this miracle that sort of, it feels like a miracle, but the science that is mm-hmm. really happening right in front of you. Let's talk a little bit about some of the new solutions on what some of these physicians and scientists and researchers are doing to sort of figure out how to create organs by design. Who wants to sort of tackle some of the new science? Would that be you, Niobe, or?
So I just like to comment on one thing, Lori, that you mentioned, because that particular sequence with Harlow had a lot of meaning for me, because I have a wonderful 5-year-old grandson, healthy little boy, but when he was 6 months old, we discovered that he had a horrible heart defect. One that at Boston Children's Hospital, one of the greatest children's hospitals in the world, they only see 2 cases of this a year. Mm. And the doctors told us if the operation didn't work, he would have to have a heart transplant. So we were really confronted with this situation. Thank God that the operation did work, and he is one and done, and he is very healthy. Medical science, again, right impacting us personally. But that sequence with Harlow, because we were almost in that situation, really impacted me greatly.
Right. And the parents are making a very difficult decision. It seems like, might think, well, this is, of course, you're going to accept the heart transplant. But this is a lifelong chronic, condition, because this child's, could have problems in the future. There's anti-rejection mm-hmm. medication. These are really weighty decisions for every family.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you feel so bad, because here are these young people just starting off their life together with another little child, and all of a sudden they have to make this enormous life and death decision. And as you're right, but the wonderful thing about children is they're incredibly resilient. Incredibly resilient.
Niobe, let's talk a little bit about some of those new solutions. What did you discover?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll just add that Baby Bergen lives just north of the borders of the Dakota in Manitoba, and you're going to see her as a 2-year-old in this film.
Yeah.
that really was a wonderful story. But we've already known for about 15, 20 years that you can transplant hearts into babies, or organs into babies, with a much lower risk of rejection, because essentially before 6 months the infant immune system is not educated to recognize foreign tissue. So chances are much better for a baby than they are for an adult when they get an organ. And that's a piece of science that Baby Bergen benefited from. Mm-hmm. But the really cutting edge stuff in this film, it's fascinating. We went down to the Texas Heart Institute in Houston to visit Dr. Doris Taylor, who's leading a group working on what we call regenerative medicine. Essentially, what they're promising to do is use your own stem cells to grow you a new organ outside of your body that you can eventually take into your body if you need a transplant. So the big issue around organ transplant medicine today is rejection. When you get an organ, you're then on immunosuppressant drugs for a lifetime, and those drugs essentially suppress your immune system to the point that you're very susceptible to other illnesses and diseases, including cancer. But with regenerative medicine, what we see is the prospect that if you need a heart, if your heart is failing, you can begin to work with a team of doctors who will grow you a new heart with your own living tissue, your stem cells, that will come into your body and that you won't reject because it's yours. So this is really the frontier of transplant medicine, and take the cameras right inside Doris's lab to show you what's happening.
And of course, that's not just going to help with the rejection issue, although that's a huge advance, but it's also going to help with the donor issue.
Right.
Because if
Absolutely.
You can grow organs out of your own cells, then the whole issue of needing so many donated organs. And I think one thing that was so tense in this film is, sometimes these organs have to come from hours away. And a lot of that could be eliminated if we could use stem cells to regenerate organs. That would be just amazing.
Niobe, talk a little bit about the responsibility to the organ itself, because there's a moment where one of the patients who's received a liver, her name is Pat, and she's really having a difficult time post-operatively. And the doctor explains, you know, like there might be a situation where you would say, like, enough is enough. Let's just, but somebody gave Pat this liver, and this changes the conversation, the ethical conversation. There's so much happening in that moment for that surgeon.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the surgeon, Dr. James Shapiro, who does the transplant of the liver into Pat, he tells us he is responsible to the recipient and to the donor. And so what you see in the film is a very difficult recovery for Pat after the transplant. She's very ill by the time a liver comes up that's a match for her. And so she goes into the operation already at death's door. And it's a struggle that takes many months just to get her out of the ICU. And so I was wondering, why are we spending this much time and money on a case like Pat's when she's not certain she really wanted to go through this? And James Shapiro stopped me and said, think about the person who gave that organ. We have a responsibility to do the best by that person. They gave the gift of life. And so it's our responsibility to make sure that their organ has the best chance of improving someone else's life chances. So that was really a discovery for me, to understand that in every transplant, there are two sides to the picture, and you have a responsibility to the deceased as well.
And let's close with this. I know you have to go on to, you know, other tasks in your day here, but this the moment of silence. Tell me a little bit about the tenderness and the respect that, even as this sort of frantic science, you know, there's deadlines, you know, doctors are timing when to begin a surgery down to the second, as somebody else is sort of rushing, you know, a cooler with the new organ, you know, coming out of the plane and the ambulance. And then they just pause and, like, look, we know everything that's happening here, but we need to be quiet for a minute and sort of honor this person. Getting choked up just talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we
it's
really wanted to make sure
moving.
The audience saw this. Go ahead, Paula.
Well, it's such a moving, and I think, again, people think science is so unemotional. Absolutely not. And that moment when you're just kind of holding your breath, and when, you know, everything stops, and these surgeons stop and everything stops just to respect the organ, respect the gift of life. I thought it was amazing.